first candidates in some of this year's midterm races around the country are agreeing to fewer debates than usual or opting out of them altogether. That's true in Wisconsin, too, with a general election debate season that's shaping up to be slower than usual. Republican challenger Tim Michaels and Democratic Governor Tony Evers recently announced they'll hold one debate before Election Day in November. In the U.S. Senate race so far, Republican Senator Ron Johnson has accepted three invitations. His Democratic challenger, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, so far has only accepted one. Our next guest says we lose something when candidates cut back on debates. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As a voter, as a citizen, does this matter to you? Do you want to see candidates debate more? Candidates including Wisconsin's race for governor or U.S. Senate, for example, are debates valuable to you as a voter? What would you change about the way we do debates with political candidates? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Diana Carlin is Professor Emerita of Communications at St. Louis University. She's studied political debates for over four decades and is the author of multiple books on the topic, including the 1992 Presidential Debates in Focus. Diana, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation.
We're seeing reports from all over the country where it seems like, you know, debates aren't going to be non-existent, but they are fewer and further between than usual. What is your reaction as we get closer to Election Day?
Well, I'm disappointed. You know, as a voter, I want to hear the debates, and I think the public deserves to have them. I've always viewed the debates as a job interview, and it's just like asking people to hire you without going through the interview.
What do you think is driving candidates to maybe be more reluctant to debate?
All of the reasons why they are good are probably the reasons. They reach more people in an unfiltered way. They get into issues in more depth than a 30-second spot or a piece of direct mail or a robocall. You can get nailed by your opponent or by a question. They come with a high amount of risk. And we have a lot of very, very close races around the country at many levels. And especially incumbents. Incumbents are always reluctant to debate. And I know I live in Kansas now, and our incumbent Republican senator is refusing to debate the challenger. And there are fewer debates on the other levels, too. So it is across the country, as your introduction said. But the high risk, the fact that if you do make a mistake, it gets played over and over. And with social media, some of this gets retweeted. All of those are reasons why I think people are refusing to do it.
Now, if I'm a candidate in 2022, and I'm not for good reason, but if I am, I have a lot of ways to get, use the word unfiltered, I have a lot of ways to get filtered messages out to people. There's social media, as you mentioned. There's the old broadcast ads, YouTube ads, streaming ads, whatever. There are probably friendly media sources I know I can go to and say what I want to say. How do we overcome, I guess, the incentive structure to go to these controlled forms of outreach as opposed to these more risky forms of outreach for a candidate?
I think there are some ways to get around it so that people are more encouraged to debate. I mean, this is part of the thing, is how the debates are done often is what causes candidates to not want to participate. So the negotiation part is very important, to where people think it's fair. There aren't going to be the gotcha kinds of questions. You know, one of the reasons that the Commission on Presidential Debates went to a single moderator was that it reduced the risk for people to try to show off. If you had three people up there on the stage or four, think about the primary debates. They all want to be the one to ask the gotcha questions. And so they often don't concentrate on major issues. But if you, for instance, have a single moderator, you tell them these are the four issues we're going to talk about, and they have somebody who they really trust, that you're going to have questions from the audience, you know, whatever. If it's outlined and it looks like it has less risk, you might get people to participate more.
In our current political climate, it seems like it's hard to get two parties or two candidates to agree on one person they're going to agree is fair and non-biased. Do you see that as part of the challenge?
It is part of the challenge. And once again, you can see that with the presidential debates. Everybody has some complaint about whomever they select. Jim Lehrer was considered really the poster child for how to do this in a way that was even-handed, and that's why he did it and was the only one we had for years and years and years. And as soon as people thought that he was had maybe stepped over that line a little bit, then there were the complaints, and you began seeing a different moderator for each of the debates. But, you know, I've actually negotiated some of these in the past and have advise groups that are putting them on locally or in the state. And I think you can find people who are considered honest brokers. And that's, you know, the challenge to the sponsoring agency or the network to do that. But it's, you know, I think you have a greater chance of having a debate if you have an open seat or if you have a vulnerable incumbent who feels like they have to debate to show that they, you know, what they've done, they have a better chance of doing that. They can directly answer what the opponent is saying. So the incumbency factor also filters in as well as whether it's a vulnerable candidate or not.
Talking to Diana Carlin from St. Louis University, expert on political debates over the last bunch of decades, looking at an apparent decline in the number of debates happening in big races in this year's midterm election. Often the number is one. Or sometimes zero. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see value in getting candidates for high-profile offices in particular up in front of the cameras at the same time, the same venue, debating one way or another the big issues? Do you think it's a waste of time? Do you worry about how debates are done? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Diana, we heard from Paul on Facebook who says debates can be entertaining, but quoting here, by and large, there doesn't seem to be anyone changing who they're voting for based on debates. And Paul goes on, it's just about motivating marginal and occasional voters and clips for political advertising. So Paul not seeing a lot of value, I guess, Diana.
Well, a lot of people say that, but one of the points I always make when they say it doesn't change minds is that part of what motivates people to vote is if they have confidence in the person for whom they're voting. And what my research over all these years has shown and that of others is that it's just as important to solidify a vote, because then you're more motivated to actually vote. You see the person and you compare it to the person on the same stage. And then it's like, yeah, I really do need to go out and vote. Oftentimes it is those margins. Look at how many close races we have. And we've certainly had debates that have turned the tide. I can remember one, it was in one of my very first years of being eligible to vote, living in the state of Kansas. We had open seat, and one of the candidates was not very well known. The other one was incredibly well known and was way ahead in the polls. And they had a couple televised debates. This was back when there were far fewer networks, but the newspapers carried it. It completely flipped that race. And that was because suddenly people saw the vulnerabilities of this person who'd just been in the news a lot. And the lesser known candidate suddenly is like, this is the voice of reason. And so it completely changed the dynamic of the race. And that's one of the things where I think the media is important. You know, there have been times when the media has had an empty chair. There have been several empty chair debates. In 1980, Jimmy Carter refused to show up for a three-way debate, and they had a two-way debate. And he got beat up by two people and wasn't there to defend himself with Reagan and John Anderson. But, you know, everything that I have heard, both at, you know, looking at state level and especially at national level, is that even if you change in a close race or get an undecided voter to decide, the debate can make a difference. And if it motivates people to go out and vote, especially in a lackluster campaign where people aren't too excited, yeah, I'm going to probably vote for this person, but this motivates them to do it, they can make a difference.
And Brad on Facebook says, let's have true debate where there is one topic resolved and make the candidates stick to that topic. Brad says they might even have to do some work to defend their position. And yeah, Diana, I think most of the debates I could think of are we're covering as many topics as we can fit in. What do you think of that idea, whether it's a formal debate structure, sticking with one topic for debates?
I like it. And in fact, it's been something that I have proposed. I think one of the best debates ever was one in 1948, a radio debate in a primary, which changed the outcome of the Republican primary, the Dewey-Stassen debate. And they had one topic, and that was that communism should be outlawed. But it was broadcast nationwide. Up to that point, Stassen was clearly winning the Republican nomination, and it totally flipped that one. And Thomas Dewey, you know, became the nominee. And of course, according to some paper, you know, beat Truman. but it is something that I have recommended. And once again, it's something that the at the presidential level has changed, where it used to be a free for all, but now they announce ahead of time that there will be like four major topics. And I agree with that comment that we need fewer topics in more depth. But then, of course, you have to have more than one debate in order to give people the information on what might be of greater interest to them.
We're talking to Diana Carlin, Professor Emerita of Communications at St. Louis University. She studied political debates over the decades, and we're talking to her about a lack of political debates in a lot of this year's midterms, ranging in many cases from zero to one debate, even in high-profile races. What we lose, she says, when candidates don't debate and debate often. Call in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts. Do you want to see more debates? Do you see a value in them? How should they work? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about the role of political debates in elections, and this year's elections in particular, and why a lot of candidates are doing fewer debates, in some cases zero debates, during this year's midterms. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your own ideas to make candidate debates work better. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Jacob is with us in Madison. Jacob, hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just I wondered if the guest could comment on this being a sign of or gradual approach to authoritarianism and belief in a kind of an idolatry toward one particular personality.
Jacob, thanks for the call. Diana, do you see a lack of debate as, I guess, a step away from democracy in some form?
Yeah, I think it is. I've spent a lot of time in new democracies over the years, going in on non-governmental organizations or with the State Department to take political debates into those democracies because they saw them as a starting point, that you suddenly now are being transparent and people can look side by side and make the comparisons themselves based on what the two candidates or in these other countries, multiple candidates have said. And if we don't have that, then we have lost some of the transparency. We have lost the opportunity for ourselves to compare what's being said, as opposed to what parts of it were being fed by the media or by the candidates themselves. And I just think in an open society, in a democratic society, that debate is a fundamental part of what that is. And by not having them, I agree, we are losing something.
Thanks for that call. Let's go next to Joe in Milwaukee. Joe, hello.
Hello. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I've been kind of following the flow here. I agree with the last several callers. We really need to have mono subject debates, you know, one subject examined thoroughly. That's going to force the issue of letting the American people know just how informed their candidates are. And kind of put them on the spot, as it were. I mean, I hate putting people on the spot, but in this day and age, you know, when facts don't actually matter anymore to a large percentage of the population, I think it's important, one, just to raise some of these issues and let people see that there are other perspectives on these issues other than what they get from Facebook and Tinder. And also, you know, it forces the issue of showing what the candidate as an individual actually knows about any given subject. And you could have a series of these. I mean, I would start with democracy in America and the rule of law and kind of go from there. I mean, you could have all kinds of different subjects. You could talk about any of the different amendments to the Constitution and, you know, get them talking about each one and what it means. I think it's a terrific idea, and I think it's an idea that we need now more than ever.
Joe, thanks for the call. Diana, no major argument from you, I'm guessing?
No, I would agree. And if you stop and think about whether it's a Senate race, a House race, a governor's race, you know, attorney general, whatever, it really does come down to two or three top issues. And polling data helps us know what's on the public's mind and what's been in the news. And so it's not that difficult to narrow this down to two or three topics. You know, the problem, I agree with the caller, it would be nice to have a series of two or three debates that get at the top topics. It's hard to get the candidates to even agree to one. But even if you could have a debate that's centered on the top two issues that, you know, the public polling is showing are on people's minds, because those often relate to other issues. So if, you know, one of it is the economy, and they're looking at jobs. Well, when you're talking about jobs, then you're also talking about what that impact is going to be on the education system. So it allows them to show their breadth of knowledge. I agree with the caller completely that we need some focus, and a debate can do that and can get you the depth.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Joan with us in Sauk City. Joan, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Joan?
Well, I do think the debates are important. It shows the depth of knowledge of the candidates on the issues that are of interest to us. It also shows their personality and their respondents to something that may irritate them in some ways. But, you know, otherwise all we get is what they want to tell us on the news and in what we read and get through our mail, instead of actually seeing their opinions on topics that they may not have sent out to us through their ads.
Joan, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Diana, again, this the opportunity to see those unfiltered candidates. Joan likes that.
Yes, and Joan, I think you're right on target. These are individuals who want to be public officials. They're going to be subjected to questions they don't like from the media if they're elected. They have it on the campaign trail. And to shy away from facing the voters who are hiring them really says something, too, about the character. And I know candidates who want debates often play up that point. You know, historically, there's a great example of it back in 1992. President George H.W. Bush hated debates, and he thought he could negotiate his way out of the three debates that were being proposed. So he kept dragging out the negotiations, and the first debate date came along, and he wasn't there, and Clinton had a big rally, and then Perot got in, and then they finally got the debates. But before Bush finally agreed to go back to the negotiating table, there was a guy who was following him around in a chicken suit. Older people will remember this one, with a sign that said, Chicken George won't debate. And that got incredible attention. Comments were made about it. Why is he afraid to get on a stage? And that helped get him back to the negotiating table. So candidates who want to debate and aren't have some opportunities to really comment on their opponent and their opponent's unwillingness. And why are they afraid to face the people and answer questions? So I think whatever the public can do, whatever the media can do, again, to point out that people are sort of hiding from what some of us consider, and your callers have an obligation to present their side and be compared directly with their opponent.
Thanks for the call, Joan. Faith joins us next in Madison. Faith, hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for this topic and the program. I guess I have a couple questions. One is, you know, I'm wondering who is in charge of making the decisions about what ultimately happens in a debate, and why can't we expect more of people running for office? I mean, even entry-level jobs have higher requirements, it seems, in many cases, for what people need to go through in order to be considered for a position, and these are very high-level positions. So I don't understand why we can't expect more of the people who are running and insist that they, you know, if they're not going to participate in a debate, then they're not going to run.
Faith, thanks for the call. Diana, to Faith's first point, who tends to be the outfit, the organization setting up these debates in the first place?
Well, that sort of depends on where you are. Some of them are media outlets. So if they're televised in a studio, it would be one of the networks, possibly public broadcasting has often done those. Some of the time, the League of Women Voters puts them on. They were the first ones to ever put on debates, and they were doing it right after they were formed, after the 19th Amendment in 2020. So they've been in that business a long time. Some of the time, it's other types of organizations that do it. So it's a variety, and they are the ones who try to get the candidates' staffs together and negotiate something that they can both live with. State fairs often have debates. We just had a debate at the Kansas State Fair a couple weeks ago with our gubernatorial candidates. The Senate debate did not happen. So, in various states and cities and even in the country, in the U.S., the Commission on Presidential Debates has been around since the 88 election, and they're the ones who do the general election debates. The primary debates are all done by the networks. And if you notice the difference between the primary debates for president and the general election, the primary debates have advertising. These are money makers for them, and that's part of why they aren't useful, like one of our early callers said, because they're all out there for the gotcha questions and the ratings. The general election debates are paid for privately. They're all done through a 501, a nonprofit, and it's all money that's been contributed, and there are no ads. So they are not commercials. They are not a money maker for anyone.
Diana, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Oh, you are very welcome.
That's Diana Carlin, debate expert at St. Louis University, looking at a decline in the number of political debates, apparently, this year around the country.